All right, so we're finishing up our time under the communication piece. We went through the sheet. It's called a family conference, helping you to communicate more effectively in your family life when you come into conflict with one another. And you will, we will, we do, we know that, we all know that. And so we become short-fused and tempers flare up. And so just a very quick overview of where we've been in this this communication, building bridges, not walls, confronting yourself. We looked at that and just some of the ideas with that. And then the second sheet, if you have your study guide with you, looked at rules for the sessions that you would have as you come together as a family to discuss problems. We also looked at, communication with others. And then we looked at the sheet last week about all the different scriptures and the 16 points with scripture references about how to have a family communication table, how to have a conference table, how to discuss things biblically. And then we came to the last sheet here in your notes called Communication, Setting Up a Family Conference Table. And so we get through most of the, I'll just do a very quick overview. We get to, I think, the last one, the procedure and summary. So I'll just do the place, when you're going to have a conference table, you have problems you want to discuss, it's not always in the moment that you want to do that. Not always the best time. You're irritated or whatever. Just take a breath, take some time and think about it. Maybe something's been eating away at you. Pick a right time. If you've got kids, wait till they're in bed. Wait till they're, you're not interrupted. The rest of us don't have them. Pick a good time. After work, after dinner, whatever you want. Hey, can I talk to you about something that's been on my mind? I really want to discuss this because I think it's important to our relationship to make it better. And so you just pick a good place, agree upon a place, wherever that might be. And then the purpose is to not to argue. It's to just discuss issues and problems that you're having with your failures, sins, whether it's you or your spouse or something, and under purpose in your notes. And then how do you apologize? You just say, I'm sorry, and walk away? No, that's not sufficient. We don't do that with God. When we come to Christ in our salvation, we have a whole list of sins. Once we're convicted of our sin and we need salvation, we answer to God. God, I'm sorry for what I've done, and you answer, you give that. And so that's how we should apologize to one another. I'm sorry that I apologize for not being kind in my speech, in my attitude. Will you please forgive me for that? You just own it, right, and give it out, and it's gone. And so the other person says, I forgive you. And then it's like God forgives. He chooses not to remember it. He just puts it into the sea of his forgetfulness, right? So we apologize properly. And, look at that second paragraph. Not all problems can be solved, maybe in one sitting. Maybe they can be. It should be. You should be able to solve it in one sitting, but maybe not. Maybe it's an onion that's got to be unpeeled to get to the core. And that's really what we want to do, is get to the core of the problem. Right? We don't want to keep doing surface fixing, Band-Aids. We want to get to the core of the sin and figure out what is the problem. Why am I feeling this way? Why am I saying this? Why am I doing this? We know it's in our heart. We looked at that already. But maybe there's a contributing factor. Maybe you're contributing to your spouse's problem, anger, frustration, annoyances. Maybe you're a contributing factor, right? Because Jesus does say, woe to those who cause one of my little ones to stumble. Can I really cause you to stumble? I can contribute, but I can't cause it because it's your heart. But we have contributing things going on with one another. So we want to really get these out of the way so we're not contributing to my spouse's or my brother or sister's issues. Right? I don't want to be a contributing factor to other person's sin. So we don't want to be careful with that. And then the procedure, right there in his first sentence, if any conferee argues or clams up, stomps off, gets pouty, you want to just you want to take a minute and do the prearranged signal timeout. Someone gets you're talking and it, all of a sudden the tempest flares again. Timeout. Let's step away, take a break, pray, think about it for a minute, go get a glass of water, and spray it on your face. I mean, drink it or whatever, you know. But, you know, so we want to have that procedure, do a timeout signal, whatever that might be, and then just take a break, take a minute, stop talking and just take a break. So, and then the last one, well, before we do the last sentence, this might be one of those times to reread Matthew 7, Colossians 3, 12 through 15, Philippians 2, and then Ephesians 4. So keep these scriptures handy when you are having a conference. And then the summary, have a specific place to confer. This is helpful. And then the husband, or the father, or head of household, or that, whoever that might be, take the leadership role and initiate it. Men, if you're the head of your home, that's your responsibility. You're the leader. You're the head. You need to guide your family, right? As Christ loves the church, that's what Christ does. He guides the church. That's your responsibility, men, particularly, to do that. Now, obviously, if your spouse is having a problem, you don't know it. Guys, we can't read minds, right? We don't read minds, so... You know, the wife who can say, can we have a conference? And then from then on, the man should just take over, right? All right, let's have it at this time, and we'll talk about these things. And so men, take the role that you have been given to by God. Don't give it to somebody else. You do it. It's your responsibility. And then begin with prayer, number 3, 4. If someone stops conferring and begins arguing, use your prearranged signal to indicate that, in your opinion, they have stopped discussing and are arguing. Do not let this go into an argument. Don't let it. Shut it down very quickly. Now, you got to be gracious and kind, but shut it down. If someone's going to argue, you're not there to argue. That's just more, you're adding more sin to the problem, right? You're just putting gas on the fire. Do not allow it to go to argue mode. Men, or whoever is, if you're a single mother, then that's your, you know, don't, whoever's leading it, don't let it get into arguments. And then, for number 5, just record the results, and take notes, and, you know, things like what has to be taken, actions that need to be taken, decisions that need to be made, changes that have to be made. Keep that in a notebook, and that would be very helpful. And then you just close in prayer. So that's pretty much it. I don't know if you have any questions or things you want to discuss from previous lessons about what we've covered here in this. I think it should be helpful if you need some order to solving problems. It's a helpful tool. Keep it with you. And so I have other copies if you need another packet, if you need a fresh set. So That's it. I don't know if you have any other thing you want to add to it, what it works for you, what was helpful for you in your solving problems in your family, marriage. So it looks like not much. I guess I've covered it all. I don't know. All right. Wow, excellent. That's excellent. Well, hey, you know, we make little victories here, right? Yeah, that's good. It's good. You know, I was thinking about some of the material I've covered in discussions we've had, and I'm thinking, let's see, is that a first world problem or a third world problem? You know, because some of these things are just, they're just little things that are irritations, and we allow it. Hey, we're Americans. We're in America, the land of plenty. Everything is good. Everything is, you go to a third world nation, they're not going to worry about hanging up your coat. You know, just,
They don't have coats.
Yeah. But, you know, so we have to be careful how far we take these things, right? Make sure it's sin that you're dealing with, not, you know, that's most serious. But then there's these little irritations that, if you love your spouse, you'll fix it. It's just that simple. So, all right, so just a very quick overview of where we've been and where we're going. The first lessons that we talked about, we looked at God's design for the family, right? We talked about creation and covenant, Genesis, and what happened there. Then the second one, we're talking about building strong marriage, and selfless love, and affectionate love. We talked about that. You remember what that was about, being selfless and affectionate. And then the third session, or the third topic, was the role of the husband. Man, I hope you're remembering these things, the loving leadership and headship piece. We talked about that. I hope you remember these things or are practicing these things. The only way you're going to know that is if you do some self-assessment and also ask your spouse. You can help you with that. How am I doing in that? And then we looked at the next one was the role of the wife, respectful submission and partnership. Ladies, how are you doing with that? Ask your husband. He could evaluate that. And then do you remember what we talked about? We spent quite a long time on that section out of Titus 2 and some of that. And then last one here is the communication in marriage. We just went through that, building bridges, not walls, right? So, Derek, you have a question?
Well, I was just going to say something that you mentioned before, just about the family conference table. I've used it in my own life before, Katie, and then with Katie, and I think it's a good way to just, you guys can probably attest to being married longer than I have, but I think it's a good way to springboard and start building the family conference, and then as you grow in leadership, as you grow in your marriage, I think it'll just be a second nature. You'll know when to talk.
Yeah.
All those things.
Yeah.
It's a good tool. I just want to say it's helped me for sure.
Yeah, the more you do this, the better you get at it. It just becomes like muscle memory, right? Use that term. It's automatic. You're in automatic mode. So, So thanks for that.
Did you share the Ephesians, the rule four rules of communication, the Ephesians 4?
Oh, I did not. I did not do that. No, I should. I'll bring it up next week. I don't have that with me. But yeah, the rules of communication. Yeah, that's an important piece. So we'll just go over that quick next week. But so any other comments or has been helpful? Has it been useful to you in your relationship building or Christian walk, your Christian life? I don't know. I hope so. I hope it's been helpful. Good. All right. Well, this week we're going to start a new topic in the family topics here. It's intimacy in marriage. Intimacy in marriage. It's the physical, emotional, and spiritual part of marriage. And so when you think of intimacy, what do you think? What comes to your mind? You can hold off on that just before if you have anything you want to add or say. But intimacy in marriage, what comes to your mind when you hear the word intimacy? What comes to your mind when you hear that? Well, let's look at, there's three parts of this. There's the physical, emotional, and spiritual parts of intimacy. But if we look at, I'm gonna go with it. What do you think of when you first hear the word intimacy? What comes to mind?
Sex.
Sex. Very, very good. Very good. Thank you, Jackie. Yeah, you're gonna wake us up here. Sit up and take notice, right? What else? Any other comments? Any other words that come to mind?
Closeness.
Yeah, that's a good one. We're gonna cover that. Anything else? Just throw it out there.
What was just that?
What comes to your mind when you hear the word? Oh, the closeness.
Just
in relationship, closeness.
I think spiritual bonding in the word, just that spiritual intimacy, just being together.
Right. Yeah, we're going to get there. Yeah. Anything else?
Private. It's only the two of you.
It's private.
Include right. Anybody else? It's
right.
Just the two.
That's a good point. Mm. Yeah. Typically, it's two people. Mm. Yeah. Anything else that comes to mind? All right, well, I'm going to go into my notes here. Well, first of all, look at, thank you, Jackie. Turn to Song of Solomon. Song of Solomon. Chapter 1.
Is it Song of Songs?
Song of Solomon, yeah, whatever you want to call it. People use different terms for the book. So Solomon says here,
which chapter?
Verse 1 and 1, verse 2. But Solomon does not waste any time with this. He gets right to the heart of the matter. He says, the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's, may he kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. So Solomon, he doesn't do a Paul, grace and peace unto you. He just gets right to the point. He's talking about marital love here, and he He says it, kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. May he kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. So, yeah, this is a book about marital love. You hear a lot of commentaries that talk about, well, it's allegory with Jesus and the church, and it's a picture. No, I don't believe that. I mean, there are some things you can see. You can read in between the lines of the tender relationship that these two had for one another. It's all through the book, and it's poetic language, so you can use some imagination when you see some of the words that they use about each other and their bodies and things that they are partaking in. You can use your imagination, right? Sanctified imagination. But this is Song of Solomon, and he gets right to the point. It's such a wonderful book about marital love and emotion and tenderness and sweetness of marriage and relationships there. So this is not a book that goes away. This is God's standard love manual for all of your married life. Now, you know, you young married lives, they're going to have a different part and enjoyment. You get older, well, your body starts to get creaky and it starts breaking down and things change. And so, you know, that takes a different turn, and it's displayed. Our emotions and our physical tenderness towards one another changes over time. It's a different season. It's like raising children. They become infants, and then they get married. So all along the way, there's different stages in our lives and in our relationships one another. So we honor that, and that's okay. And then look at 1 Corinthians. We're going to cover that. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. I'm just going through the scriptures that I'm going to cover with this topic in family life. And so 1 Corinthians 7, verses 3 through 5, Paul writes, "Now concerning the things about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. But because of immoralities, each man is to have his own wife, and each woman is to have her own husband. The husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another, except by disagreement for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again, so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." And then Hebrews 13:4 is another passage we'll look at, and that says this. The writer says, "Marriage is to be held in honor among all."
What is that?
That is in Hebrews 13:4. "Marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers, God will judge." And then the last one is found in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24 and 25. "For this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall be one flesh, become one flesh. And the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed." So these are the scriptures we'll be looking at in this study. So intimacy, let's define it. We already talked about what comes to your mind. I asked that question when you hear the word intimacy, and then when you hear the word intimacy in marriage, what comes to your mind in that? Jackie said sexual ideas, that can be part of it. Certainly, it is certainly part of it, but it's only part of it. I would define it this way. I'm going to define it this way for the sake of our study. Intimacy is being in a place of having a close, personal connection with another person, characterized by deep understanding, trust, and vulnerability. Would you agree with that statement? Would we see that in Genesis when God made man and woman? I think we see that. Close personal connection with another person, characterized by deep understanding, trust, and vulnerability. I think when Adam and Eve were created, they had this already built in. They didn't have to take 20 years and develop this, right, like we do. They were close. And I also think that it was a state of being with God. They were intimate with God. They had that close personal connection with him and a deep understanding, trust, and vulnerability, openness. So before the fall, I think this was present in Genesis 24 and 25. And so in back to Genesis 2, he says in verse 24, he says, for this reason a man shall leave, in verse 24, a man shall leave his father and his mother to be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh, and the man and wife, his wife, were both naked and were not ashamed. What do we see here? Well, he says in verse 24, I was reading this and doing my study, he says, for this reason. So I looked at the verse and I said, what does he mean? For what reason? Right? He gives for this reason. For what reason? So I had to kind of dig a little, and you know, we go expository. We look at text and context and words, and we quit keeping it. But this verse out of its context seems a little bit kind of, I don't know, what does that mean? So I had to dig. And so I want to ask you, I know you're on the spot, it's early. I had plenty of time to study this out and think about it, but I know I'm putting you on the spot. How would you answer that if someone said to you, hey, I was reading Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, the writer says, for this reason a man shall leave. So for what reason? John?
You gave us a clue because you were saying verse 18 where it says, and the Lord God said, it's not good that the man should be alone. I'll make a helpmate for him.
So there's two reasons, right?
The reason that someone leaves the mother and father.
Okay. So we say, safe to say there's two reasons right here?
Yep.
Which ones? What are they?
Well, alone.
Aloneness. John talked about that. And the other one? What was the other one? Yeah, that's the helper, right? He made a helper. Adam saw there was nobody like him. All the animals had mates, but he was alone.
It wasn't the same kind.
Right.
There were different kinds, but there wasn't anyone.
Male, female, right?
Yeah.
But he's alone. And so where's my mate? Where's, you know, you can imagine he's wondering, where am I in this? And so God makes him a mate, a helper, right? Not to be alone. And so for the reason, so he wouldn't be alone and he would have a helper. What grace, what kindness that is for God to take care of that. So, and then the other thing is in verse 25, and the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. What do you see there? What is God providing there? Derek.
Well, it certainly gives the parameters for how God has defined marriage, and that you know that intimacy within marriage is not only commanded, but it's right, it's good. It's not a bad thing. It's nothing to be ashamed, because it's between man and wife the way God has defined it. He has set those parameters.
Right. Shame only came after the fall.
Yes.
Right.
And also pre-fall.
Yeah.
Covenant relationship.
So we see here that he provided this for enjoyment and pleasure. Nothing wrong with that, right? Nothing wrong with that. And so we want to keep that in mind. If you go to, I'm not going to go to 1 John, but it was a problem with 1 John where they said in the day was that the flesh was evil, right? And for Jesus to become flesh, he wasn't God. He came, you know, he was in the flesh, and flesh is evil, spirit is good. And they had this whole separation thing going on, but we don't see that anywhere in Scripture. And so we, even some circles in Christianity, they have the same idea, the mentality that the physical pleasure is evil. It's sinful. It's taboo.
Narcissism.
We shouldn't do that. Yeah, narcissism, right. And so we should never think that. We want to have our minds informed by God, right? So I don't want to be crass or crude, but Christians should have the best the best marriages when it comes to sex, right? Because knowing what God has given to us. It's just, he invented it. Every generation thinks they invented it, right? They say, hey, you know, we're it. We're gonna drive we're gonna drive the show here. No. So we would never want to minimize the importance of marital love and sexuality. Yeah, it's sinful. It's sinful thinking. Our minds are not being informed by Scripture when we think that way. And so we should be setting the standard. Now, we're not going out there and broadcasting it all over the place, but if you're going to define if sexuality, especially, we're living in a way over-sexualized culture. I mean, it's everywhere we go. And, you can say, well, it's always been that way, but I think ours is a little bit different because of internet, television, billboards. It's everywhere. You can't escape from it. The workplace, people talk about it like it's like they're going to buy candy in a candy store, grocery store. It's just, it's so vulgar and crass. You know, I know our culture's not the first one to be so depraved. I mean, Sodom and Gomorrah, they were pretty, very bad. God destroyed them. But it's just the accessibility today. It's just there, you know. It's on your cell phone. You don't even have to go looking for it. The internet just pops up sometimes, right? And so just be aware of that. I think we all are, but you know, we need to have a sanctified mind when it comes to these topics and not be sucked into the world's ideas of this.
Yeah, that was something that was really hard to wrap my mind around. You know, before marriage, it's forbidden. But in marriage, it's commanded. And, you know, that stuff is everywhere. And, you know, one of the phrases that came to mind, especially from, you know, the men's conference with Dave Doran and just other men who said this, you know, you have to be on guard. It's, you can't help what you see, but you can help what you look at. You know, you just have to, you know, you can't help if something comes your way, but you got to, you know, it's every year, right? It's everywhere.
Yeah. You got to be conscious. Yeah. Depending where you go. You know, personally, I don't like to go to the beach. I mean, I love to go to the beach, but I don't like to go to the beach. You know, it's like, where do you look? You know, I got to look up, you know, walking around looking up in the sky. It's crazy. I like to go, but I don't like to go. It's just not, to me, it's not beneficial. It's not profitable. Anyway. So, yeah.
As my grandchildren are getting older, I've discovered how difficult it is even to buy clothes. Oh, yeah. It's really hard.
Yeah.
Like, you'll go to some place that I feel like is fairly safe, like Old Navy. You know, the price is good, it's okay. But you can't buy a dress there because they just cut too low there. For a kid who's 12 or 13, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we got to be careful not to get sucked into the perversion of the culture in either direction, right? We can become so standoffish even where it's proper, and yet we can also go where we shouldn't go. And so we want to really be careful how we dance that dance, because we're going to look at that when we get to 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and 7. We want to be very careful how we approach life in these areas. So we'll look at that in a little more detail as we get there. And so yeah, 1 Corinthians 7 is a key passage. Moving right along here. So God gave us each other for companionship, so we wouldn't be alone. We see that in the garden, and also for enjoyment and pleasure. And so, go for it, right? God gave it to us, go for it. So, Genesis 24, 25 is key. And as I said before, while it's often associated with romantic and sexual relationships, intimacy goes beyond mere physical presence and involves mutual feelings of emotional closeness. All right, so that's a lot of times in Christianity we poo-poo emotions, right? But God has given us emotions, so we want to keep those in proper picture, proper balance, as we enjoy our emotions, enjoy them, especially in marriage. And so, from a biblical perspective, intimacy is a deep, many-sided, and close connection with God and or another person, and is characterized by things like closeness, familiarity, trust, mutual understanding, and a deep personal knowledge of one another. And so this transcends marriage. It goes even into our personal friendships and relationships. We should have the best relationships in the Christian, in the church. And so so I think this captures the idea of intimacy. So married couples, beyond romantic and physical intimacy, what does a mutual feeling of emotional closeness look like in your marriage? You can answer it or not. It just be a rhetorical question. If we think about this, what does it look like in your marriage? You know, you're married and you go on, right, 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and you can become like sometimes, and I think there's seasons probably in our marriages where you can become distant, you can be friends, like you're just roommates, friendships in your marriage. And so those are very dangerous times when you get to those places, right? You want to regroup and think about it. Hey, how are we doing? You know, I just feel a little distant, a little, you know, let's ramp up the closeness a little bit. It's always good to take stock in those because life gets busy, right? I mean, you have kids and they're taking your time away. Then you've got the job, illness, bodies, right? They break down. We're getting older. I'm getting older. I'm feeling that. I mean, just things get in the way of marriage and it can be distracting. And that's dangerous to be there. And Satan loves that. He loves it for us to be distracted from doing the right thing. And that's not only in marriage, that's everything, everywhere. Derek.
I mean, again, only coming up to 3 years, but I would say, not that we're like, oh boy, trials, but I mean, we should be joyful in them. I think that's something that's brought Katie and I closer as trials and how we deal with them. And that's something that produces closeness. And because when you're in a new relationship, it's like a roller coaster, but I think the stability comes through all of those things. And, you know, I see sides of Katie, she sees sides of me that no one else knows, like just how silly we are with each other and the inside things we say and laugh about. And, you know, and that's something I have with her that I don't have with anybody else.
Mm.
You know, and that's something I would arguably say even more special than the procreational part of it. You know, just there's things Katie and I laugh about. And I just, you know, I'm glad, I'm honored that I get to wake up to her every day and I say, oh, why did she even marry me? You know?
Yeah.
So, and I'm just grateful for that, you know?
Yeah, she's the first person you see when you wake up and the last person you see when you go to sleep, right, in the day. So, yeah. So this idea of what we're talking about, emotional closeness and intimacy in relationship, is this idea only for marriage relationships? Do we see this anywhere in Scripture outside of marriage, intimacy? Jackie?
I just always liken it to Christ. We are his bride, and it's that closeness that we're supposed to have with Christ because he refers to us, and that's why God hates marriage. Divorce so much because Christ has chosen us, chosen the church as his bride.
Yeah.
And the believers and everything. That's where I just see that connection there.
Yeah, and you talk about divorce, God hating divorce, and if you've been divorced, I'm not, you know, it happens, but you know, in a marriage relationship, one of the reasons why he hates divorce is because God is not separate. Christ and the church is never separate. He's never letting that go. So it's that intimacy in the intense relationship between Christ and the church. We want to preserve that. So that's an important aspect of intimacy. Do you see it anywhere outside of marriage in the Scriptures? Intimacy? Joe?
Yeah. I mean, if you just think about the disciples themselves traveling around, it wasn't first century. They didn't have showers and private bathrooms. So, I mean, you got to really know somebody. And And then you just look at Paul, Paul Timothy.
Yeah.
He was,
yeah. Yeah, there's several examples. Yeah. Yeah, we see that with Jonathan and Dave.
Together we'd be in a hotel, but it would still be, if me and you were staying in the room, I would know a lot more about you than if, you know, Derek could go down and whoever else came from the church.
Yep. Mm. True.
But yeah, how intimate that really would have been for them to be together for years.
Yeah. Yeah, if we had a room together, the telltale sign would be in the next morning when you wake up and say, man, do you snore? But I still love you, brother. Yeah, so that's some of the telltale signs. But the other thing, you know, Jonathan and David, right? Close relationship. Jesus and the disciples, you had others, you know. You see it outside of marriage, intimate relationship, close personal relationship. Al. Right, no deficiency, right? All perfect love. And so that's our example to follow, certainly. And so, yeah, we see it all over the place. So here's a question for you to think about it. You don't have to answer, just do some self-evaluation, some inventory. I was thinking about this as I was preparing. So here's my question. When it comes to marriage, how would you rate your marriage? 0 being roommate status, or 10 being perfection. We could set the standard. Right, so we're all probably somewhere in between those. Maybe we're at 0, I don't know, some of us, but you know, number 10, I don't think any of us are there yet, but we should strive for that, right? We should strive to set the standard for what does a marriage look like? What does a godly marriage look like? Especially if you've been in this class since we began. We defined the covenant relationship. We defined the roles of husband, leader, the wife as the follower, the picture of the Christ in the church, all of these things. We should be, by now, we should have a heightened awareness of what this should be looking like in our lives, right, for us in this room. We are going to be held accountable to these things by God, right, for what we know we need to practice. So these are things to be really thinking about. These are serious questions. You know, we can chuckle and laugh, but yeah, we should really take it serious, how we look at marriage and how we are living our lives. It's difficult, right? Difficult living with another person that's a sinner like you. Derek, question, comment?
I was going to say, I mean, what you're saying is so true. I mean, it's the First Timothy 3 qualification. How could a man shepherd the house of God if he doesn't shepherd his household? I mean, that also goes for likewise and wives and how they're, I mean, we'll answer for how we have led and shepherded our wives, and wives will answer for how they submitted to their husband. You know, that's a very serious thing.
Right. Yeah, will I be able to get to stand before Christ and say, when it comes to my role as a leader, husband, father, man of God, will I be able to say to him, Lord, I did what you asked me to do?
Not to take away from the joy of marriage. Absolutely joyful.
And as a wife, you're going to stand before God one day and say, as a wife, mother, I did what you asked me to do, Lord. Mm. Will you be able to confidently say that? And I think there's areas where we think like, I don't know. Right? Yeah. So we want to be striving. What are you striving for in your marriage? You individually, not my spouse. Don't forget looking at your spouse. You, individual, as a man, as a woman, what are you striving for in your marriage? Not, if he does, I will, or if she does, I will. That's irrelevant. God's not going to judge you. Oh, well, you didn't do it because she didn't? Oh, well, okay, I'll give you that pass. No. It's not going to work like that. And so we want to be very careful and guard our responsibilities and to carry those out before a watching God who is going to hold us accountable one day. It's serious business to think about. So what are you striving for? Huh? What is intimacy beyond physical look like? While we think about categories, shared vulnerability in your marriage, emotional connection, spiritual alignment, things like intellectual stimulation. You have discussions with one another. Do you stimulate each other intellectually in your relationships, husbands and wives, or just friendship relationships? Do you have that? So there's that, the vulnerability, that's openness. This means openness, shared openness with one another. Things like emotional connection, that's emotional closeness. We'll look a little more of this as we move ahead. How about spiritual alignment, intellectual encouragement, shared experience as well? So under the emotional closeness, do you have the ability to share your deepest thoughts with your spouse or friend, depending if you're single and you have close friendships like Jonathan and David? But in a marriage situation, do you share your deepest and most personal thoughts with one another and feelings with one another? Al? Yep. How fast can trust be broken? Snap of the finger, right? One word, right? And it may not even be the word. Maybe your body language, right? Your attitude. It doesn't take much. We are frail in our emotional settings sometimes. So being careful not to violate that trust, but also not to allow a trust to be easily violated, right? You have thin skin when someone says something to you, or thicker skin. Maybe you need to thicken your skin up if you're taking everything personal, or someone has to walk in eggshells in the home because someone says something to you and you can't take it, or you don't take it. That's not good. That's pride. There's a lot of things going on there. So it works both ways, being careful to what we say, how we say it, also in receiving what is said. We want to be very careful not to wear it on our sleeve. So, can you share your most personal thoughts, your feelings, fears, dreams? Can you do that with your spouse without fear of judgment? Can you be open without fear of being judged? And can your spouse be open with you without you judging them? Why? God doesn't, right? As a Christian, our judgment is gone in Christ. Nothing surprises God, right, in our world, nothing. He's not up in heaven thinking, wow, I never thought they'd do that. So why are we surprised by our sin? A spouse's sin, a friend's sin. Why are we surprised? Don't be. Because that's just self-righteousness. I would never do that. I would never do what David did, right, with Bathsheba and all of that thing. Yeah, you would. Given the right circumstances, the right place, the right time, the right mindset, you would do it. Because we're depraved. We have a depraved, wicked heart. And it's deceitful above all that we don't even understand our own heart. And so we would be there. We would do it. So can you be in a relationship with your spouse and not judge them for their sin or whatever? And do you feel safe in your relationship with your spouse or friend to be able to say things and not be judged? You know, there's about 50 one another's in the New Testament. So we need to be about one another. We need to be about one another. And so that means being vulnerable and being open and being honest. So emotional closeness. And the next part would be having a deep understanding, having a detailed knowledge of another person and expecting and accepting the other person's true self, who they are. Can you accept somebody for who they are and you feel accepted for who you are? Another point would be reciprocity, a mutual exchange, mutual relationship. Intimacy in a relationship is a two-way street. It's not a one-way street. It's two ways. And so it requires mutual sharing with our lives with one another, mutual backing, validation, endorsement, or having another one another's back, whatever term you want to use, right? Does somebody have your back? Do you feel that? Do you sense that in your marriage, that your spouse has your back on it? They're going to support you? I'm not talking about supporting sin and foul behavior. I'm just saying in a general, regular relationship, do you feel that your spouse has your back? And do you have their back when they're vulnerable and they're weak, when they're excited about life and those kinds of things? Do you have a desire for closeness? And that goes for both individuals. Well, again, the types of intimacy, we look at some of the key components. It's emotional closeness, a deep understanding, and a mutual exchange. And then there's different types of intimacy. I've looked at some of these already, but this vital close bond is what we ought to have. It's often, as I said earlier, it's often associated with romantic or sexual relationships, this idea of intimacy. But it's really a vital bond, a close bond with friends. Friends, family relationships, and again, the emotional piece, there's that deep connecting on a deep emotional or feeling level that we should have with one another. Is sharing your inner world, your inner thinking, your most intimate thoughts of what goes on in your mind. Very key and important to share those things. Having heartfelt conversations about your worries. Can you do that with your spouse, with your close friend? I can do it with God. He's not shocked at my heart. So why should we be shocked with one another? We shouldn't be. Conversations about your worries, or supporting each other through stressful times in your life. You live on earth, you're going to have stressful times. Right? We all know that. Days of stress. Who do you have to help you with those things? You need close relationships. We do need that. It's sharing your deepest thinking, your mind, your will, your emotions, and being safe and trustworthy and full acceptance. That's, as Al said, trust. You violate trust, well, it's hard to get it back once you violate it. It can get back, but it's hard to get back sometimes. Then there's the idea of vulnerability, or openness. Your openness in your relationships, openness and trust, willingness to be fully known by another person, sharing, I already said this, thoughts, feelings, weaknesses, struggles, without fear of rejection or judgment or control. And then the other idea is having understanding and compassion. What does that require? Well, I think it requires honest and open communication, patient, active listening. We talked about that, right, earlier in earlier lessons. Actively seeking to understand what is going on in the heart and mind of the other person. Very important things to be thinking through. Who would read 1 Peter 3:7? And we're going to close with that. 1 Peter 3:7. Go ahead.
You husbands, the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with a weaker vessel, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered.
So the point of the passage is to be understanding, have an understanding mind. Not only husbands with wives, but I think it's all of us. We are called to be understanding with one another.
It looks different.
It does look different. It looks different with genders. It looks different with stages of life, where we are in our life. We need to be understanding and listening. And it's achieved through mutual love and support and respect and trust and all of the things that we've been talking about this morning. So